Okay, so we'll get started. This is a ritual. We have this ritual. This is not my idea. Okay, but we do this anyway. We chant the Metta Sutta, then we will have a little meditation, and then I'll give a talk, and then you can ask some questions. I'll try to leave some time for questions. There's no clock in this room, so I don't know what time it is. Okay, so but someone should take the bell. Okay, thank you. Okay, so we're going to chant this Metta Sutta. Metta Sutta. I'm not going to talk about the Metta Sutta, but I will talk about Metta tonight, maybe. Who knows? Maybe. So this is what should be done. Okay? So, you all know this, Chad. So,
this is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to fixed views. The pure heart is one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Very good. It's nice we have a small group. Smaller the better. When I used to teach, I only had sometimes one student. They allow me to teach with one student, two students. Never have more than six. Because when I teach, the students have to meditate before the class. And they start off, I get 100 students in the first day of class. But after a week, 2 weeks, they dwindle down because they don't want to meditate. So I get the same students and they're in my class and then they take every class I teach. For the whole 4 years they're in college. Doesn't matter what I teach, they'll take it. Then eventually I don't have the classes in the university. I tell them to come to my house. Then I make lunch for them. Then they become my friends and they're still my friends. Now they're 50, 60 years old. They're not young anymore. So that's the way it works. That's the real teaching, how to teach, have fun. I could talk about teaching, but yeah. I was a teacher for 35 years in the university. and my exams were really interesting. In the beginning, I gave exams, and I noticed that 60% failed and 40% passed. Then I decided, well, I better, maybe the exams are too hard, so I give them the questions that I'm going to ask. And then I noticed 60% failed, 40% passed. Then I decided, well, I'll just give them the questions and the answers. 60% failed, 40% passed. It doesn't matter what you do. Why? Because some people don't bother even preparing. And they never have prepared. They always fail, and they always blame the teacher, the test, or something else. And I told my students, if you fail my class, you have to come to my house after you fail and thank me for finally failing you, and you know for sure that it's you, nothing else. And they did. They came to my house and really thanked me. They were so glad that I failed them. That's the real stuff. Then they change their life. Changes your life. Because you don't know why you fail. You think, well, I'm not smart. No, just lazy. Didn't want to prepare. Anyway, so we're going to meditate now. Don't be lazy. And be kind. You know, we just chanted the Metta Sutta. What is the Metta Sutta? The Metta Sutta is about metta. Metta. Metta is loving kindness. What kind of loving kindness? You know, we have all kinds of loving kindness. We say we love our children or we love our partner, you know? But is that what we're talking about, metta? No. That's completely the opposite. It's 100% the opposite of what the word is, how the word is used. You don't really love your children. If you did, you would let them do anything they wanted. But you don't. It's not unconditional. You always have measurements and conditions for their whatever they're doing. And the same thing for your partner. You're always weighing their amount of love. Do they love me as much as I love them? It's not love. It's something else. So metta is 100% unconditional acceptance. 100%. Without judging at all. So for example, we're going to meditate right now. Let's try to, just for fun, we'll do a metta meditation. How do you do metta meditation? You spread loving kindness, all that. I don't do any of that. Do the real metta meditation. You close your eyes, you relax, and then your mind starts wandering, right? You start thinking. Have metta to the thinking. Accept it 100%. There's nothing wrong. Is there anything wrong with a wandering mind? It's very normal. Or you're tired and you're almost falling asleep. Is there anything wrong? No. Accept it 100%. Accept everything that happens in your meditation 100%. That's the real meditation. That's metta meditation. Metta meditation is a very high meditation. It'll take you all the way to at least, you know, the first stage of enlightenment, at least, maybe further. So this is easy, actually. Meditations, what is meditation? Okay. Get the idea. I say it each time I come. What is meditation? It's getting the mind quiet, relaxed. It's relaxation. Getting the mind quiet, getting the body relaxed. You come from a very busy life. You're lay people. You know, you have jobs. You have husbands, wives, children, business to take care of. So you come here, you're tired already. You're not relaxed. You're not ready to meditate. It takes days before you get ready. Before I get really into meditation, it may take 2 or 3 days to let the mind settle down. How are you going to be able to do it? You're not a superwoman, a superman to be able to do that. So don't have such high expectations. Lower your expectations. How low? Below zero. You know, below zero if you can. Because if you have high expectations, if you have any expectations, then you're going to be in trouble because you're not going to meet your expectations. Your expectations are always too high. You're unreal about what's really going on. Meditation is not an easy thing. It's quite difficult, actually. And yet it's the easiest thing in the world. Do nothing. That's all. Is there anything easier than doing nothing? Well, it's crazy. It's so easy, right? Doing nothing. Relax and do nothing. See how easy it is? It's not. Because the mind is very agitated. So the purpose of the meditation is to quiet the mind down. How much you quiet the mind down, it depends on what you're coming in with, what you're bringing into your meditation, how busy your life was. So don't have any expectations. Just sit down and meditate. If it's noisy, the meditation, it's okay. It's not bad. If you're tired, it's okay. If your mind's wandering, it's okay. If you're restless, it's okay. Anything is okay. Why not? Right? Isn't it the truth? Am I saying something wrong? No, it's the truth. We Buddhists, we should always talk the truth. That's the most important thing. So we're going to keep our mind very gentle, serene. We're trying to get to a serene state of mind. The way to do that is just relax. Don't try to do anything. Don't do anything. It's the doing that's the problem. It's doing too much. You're trying to do something. Your mind starts wandering off, and then you do something to stop it. Or your mind is restless, and you do something to stop it. You don't have to stop it. You don't have to do anything. The doing is busy. Don't be busy. Stop being busy. The way to stop being busy is do nothing. That's why I say do nothing. That's the least busy, is to do nothing. If you're going to do anything, do a slight nudge. Say, okay, it's okay. Something like that. Or relax, or calm, or something like that. Something simple. But don't press. Don't demand. Not demanding in nature, it says in this Metta Sutta, doesn't it? Yeah. Not demanding. Don't be demanding to your mind. That's cruel, don't you think? That's not kind. To demand, it's not kind. We're kind. Kindness. So we're going to be kind to our mind for the next 30 minutes or so. And okay, so get comfortable. Remember, the first thing is to get the body comfortable, relaxed, and do as much as you can. Be a friend to your mind instead of being a boss. It's not a slave. Your mind is not your slave. Your mind is your friend. And how would you treat a friend? You don't tell friends what to do. You're friends. Otherwise, they're not going to be your friend. They'll be your enemy. And if your mind is your enemy, you're not going to have a good time meditating. So just relax. And in 30 minutes, a bell will ring. And then before you... I'm not going to say anything once the bell rings. But before you leave the meditation, you should reflect back. Are you more peaceful, more calm, more serene, more tranquil than you were before you started the meditation? If you are, and you will be, you have to be. You're not moving around, and no one's talking, and nothing's happening. So you'll be more calm, and then notice that, and that will encourage you to meditate more. That's all. Keep meditating, that's all. Okay? So, make yourself comfortable. I'm going to make myself comfortable. I'll see you later. So you can always tell if you have a good meditation if you feel that it's happening and you're just watching it. You're not involved. You're not doing it. You're not meditating. The mind is happening and you're watching. You're an observer. That's how you know the meditation is it's going in the right direction. If you feel you're involved in it, saying it's not meditation, it's the, you're involved, you're lost in your mind. You see how it is? The thing is, we get too close to everything. We get close. As soon as you get close to something, you get lost in it. You become your mind. You get involved in it. And you think you are it. You know, you become it. And then you think, because you are something, you are this thing, that you own it. And because you own it, you are it, you own it, and you should control it and make it something, you know? So that's the problem. That we think, we get so close that we get involved, and then we think we own it. And then because we own it, we should control it. And then because we're controlling it, then meditation doesn't happen, really. We're just involved in it, lost in it, absorbed in it. So try to have some distance. Put some distance between yourself and the meditation when you're meditating. You're sitting and the mind, you're watching the mind. That's all it is. You're watching your mind. You're not doing anything. You're just an observer. You're the silent observer of your own mind. That's all. That's all meditation is. And you're not doing anything. You are not doing the meditation. The meditation is just what happens when you're watching your mind. That's all. Simple, isn't it? Why make this complicated? Why make it something that you have to do? You're always doing stuff. You're always busy doing stuff. So stop doing stuff and let the thing happen. Because that's the whole problem with human life. We're always busy doing. We're the doers. We're not human beings. We're human doers. So we're doing too much. You're busy. I said, this is, you're doing nothing. Sit there and do nothing. You can't do nothing. We feel we have to do it because we own it. We own this body. This is my body. This is not your body. This is my mind. This is not your mind. You don't own it. You think you own it. Does everyone think they own their body? Is it your body? Is it? Is it really your body? It's not. Huh? No one else wants it? Poor guy. Poor guy. No one else wants it. You better find someone who wants it. You see, that's it. We want to be loved. We want to be liked. We want to be loved. We want someone who loves our body. Look, the body is the body. So you love your own body. That's the best thing. You be the lover of your own body. Means being kind to it. Giving your body metta. Metta means unconditional acceptance of your body. So when your body is tired, okay, body, you're tired, rest, take a rest. But when we're tired, we don't say take a rest. We say push yourself. What are you being so lazy for? You have things to do. Get busy. When you're meditating, get quiet. Why are you not quiet? Why are your mind running around? What are you doing wrong? You better get on the ball. You've been sitting here for 25 minutes and nothing's happening. You see what we're doing? We're controlling our own minds. But we can't control it. It doesn't belong to you. You don't control your body. Do you control your body? Do you digest the food? The body digests the food. Do you heal yourself? You take medicine, but the medicine doesn't work, really. The body does the work. That's all the medicine does is block symptoms, if it's Western medicine. If it's Chinese medicine, maybe it helps balance the stuff, but the body does the work. You don't do anything. You can't possibly heal your own body. You can't make the cells grow, do anything. Can you? Does anyone here do that? I think it's pretty amazing if you can. You can't do it. You can't do anything. You don't own anything. The Buddha said, you don't own anything. Nothing. Zero. There's nothing that you own because there's no one to own it. So that's what happens. You think you own stuff, and then because you think you own stuff, you get in trouble. That's the problem with human life. So always have some distance between you and whatever's happening. And be kind. Kindness is one of these magic things. It soothes things. It calms things. It relaxes things. It's a medicine. It's the medicine that your mind needs and your body needs. Kindness, that's all. Just add some kindness to your mindfulness and you have meditation. You need kindness. I know how to say it in Chinese, but I can't say it in English. It's the balm, B-A-L-M, the balm that you need. You know? It's that magic quality of softness and goodness and kindness that you need to give yourself. Because you don't give it to yourself. And because you don't give it to yourself, you're not engaged. Your mind can't engage with itself. You can't engage with your mind. You can't become a good friend to your mind. You want to have a friendly, warm, you know, kindness is warm too. And healing, you know. You have to be kind. Like when you put a child to sleep, for example, you don't take the child and say, the child is screaming. Okay. And you want to get it to sleep because you have things to do. You take the child and you hold it by the neck and you squeeze it. Get to sleep! Well, does that work? It doesn't work. Or you shake it like this really hard. Shake it real hard. And then its head falls off. Oh, that's not good. Put the head back on. Okay. It's no good. It's not being kind to the baby. You know what I mean? So you take the baby, you put it, you have it on your chest, in a rocking chair, and you rock it back and forth, nice baby, nice, and the baby falls asleep. The same thing with your mind and your body. Be kind, and you'll find you heal quicker, and your mind gets calmer much quicker. That's how you heal stuff. It's a healing thing. Kindness heals. It's a healing thing. It's not a sutta that you chant, and you don't know what the words mean. It's something you have to actively do. It's something you can do, but it's a non-doing. It's not a doing. It doesn't do anything. It just stops you from doing anything, you see? It stops the doing. It's not an active thing like controlling, like throttling the child. It's a soothing, relaxing. That's what you want to do. Calming. You want to do that with your mind and your body. So kindness is...
So meditation is still a sort of medicine.
Yeah, it's a medicine.
Because we calm ourselves.
Yeah.
And that's really good for your body.
Yeah, it's good.
So it is a sort of medicine.
It is medicine. It's the best medicine. There is no better medicine. Look, I've used it, I can tell you personally, I mean, I've been doing this for a long time in my life, since I'm in my early 20s, late 20s. And it does work. I've done some amazing things. I mean, Ajahn Brahm has his stories. I have my stories, too. You know, even recently, I'm not talking about 25, 30, 40, 50 years ago. I'm talking about 2 or 3 years ago, or 1 year ago, or 6 months ago, or a year ago. I broke my knee, and the doctor said 18 months. And the woman told me that 18 months you'll need. No, she said 12 months. 12 months to heal my knee. I healed it in 2 months. 2 months, that's very quick compared to a year. I broke my neck, that was two or three years ago. They said, well, about 18 months, and you only get 25, 50 maybe percent healing. I got 100% in 8 months. It's the meditation, because I sat there and I knew what was going on in my neck, and I was just there with it. I didn't do anything. I was just aware of my neck and giving it relaxation, giving it kindness. That's all. And that is medicine. I'm doing that a lot of hours a day. So that's real medicine. It's not just a few minutes a day. I was doing it a lot. Also, I was using medicine. I was using herbal medicine, comfrey, C-O-M-F-R-E-Y, which is called knit bone, and it does work on broken bones, joints, tendons, ligaments, and those kind of things. It's a magic herb. I've been using it for 45 years, so I know all about it. This is, I'm an expert in comfrey. If you want to find out more, talk to me after. Anyway, yeah, so it's a magic thing. This kindness is a magical thing. So you use it with your body, and you use it in your daily life. I'm not talking about something esoteric that you have to wait until you get a broken neck. You use it when you're relating to people. How do you get along with other people? You're kind to them. Instead of getting angry at someone or upset with someone, kindness says, we accept that person regardless of how they are. We have some people in the monastery I really don't like. I mean it. I don't like them, but I'm kind to them. Why? Because why not be kind? Because being kind, I don't have to have any negative stuff, you know, any collateral damage, as they say. You know, collateral damage? You don't want collateral damage. You let everyone be. You let everyone be. Letting be is one of these catchphrases. It means letting things just be the way they are, without trying to change them, without trying to make them better, without trying to improve them, without doing anything, make them different in some way. That we're always trying, we have this mind that always is very critical, and it looks at things and says, oh, I'll make it better. I'm going to build a better mousetrap, you know. I'm going to do it better. Do it better than my parents did it. I'm going to do it better than my brother or sister did it. This idea of, you know, improving yourself and doing better and all that is just pushing yourself, giving yourself pressure. Look, there's nothing that you can do in this life that's going to work, to be honest. Any success you have is a failure. You don't believe me? Try it. You'll have to get very old, and then you'll realize what I said is true. Every success turns into a failure. Every failure may turn into a success. We don't know. What is success and failure? Just conventional reality. It's just some idea that people have of what success is. Everything that happens in your life is just made up in your mind. It's not real. It's all made up, don't you see? The whole thing is made up. So make up good stuff. Why not? I'm making up good stuff. Look, for me, being in the monastery is the best thing I could possibly do in this human life. You give me anything else in this human life, and there's nothing that I would want to do more than this. Nothing. Why? Because this is the best actually that you can actually do. That's all. That's why I'm doing it. That's why I'm a monk. Why am I a monk? I'm a monk because this is what I want to do. I want to get out of suffering. There's suffering. Human life is suffering. It's not pleasant. The Buddha said the first noble truth. I keep repeating this. You better get this. This is the most important thing in Buddhism. The first noble truth. Life is suffering. It is suffering. There is no pleasure in human life. You have to get to understand this. It's just suffering arising, suffering passing away. You may think there's pleasure, but it's not real pleasure. You may think it's love, but it's not real love. We talked about metta, right? The difference between metta, love, between a man and a woman, that kind of love, sexual love, or, you know, affection, whatever you want to call it. And metta is totally different. The love between a man and a woman is controlling, it's possessing, owning, attaching. It's that kind of love. It's not freeing and liberating, is it? As soon as you have a girlfriend or a boyfriend, you want to control them, put them in a box. They're mine. This is my girlfriend. This is my boyfriend. This is my husband. This is my wife. These are my children. My. As soon as you have a my on there, you own it. You're owning it. Again, you see how it works? Everything. Think of all the my's you have. My religion. My house. My possessions. My car. If someone steals someone else's car, you don't worry. But if it's my car, you're terrible. It's disaster because you own it. If you didn't own it, then you wouldn't care. Because you own everything, that's why you suffer. And because you do own everything, then you suffer a lot. You have a my on everything, don't you?
Unless it makes you proud.
Huh?
Unless it makes you proud.
Proud is another problem. It's the biggest problem. That's the whole problem. Being proud means having conceit. Being a self, having a self. That's the whole problem. We go back to the core problem is you think that you're someone, that you're a being, that you're a self. You have a self in there, that the self maybe is the body. If it's not the body, it's my feelings. If it's not the feelings, it's my thoughts. If it's not the thoughts, it's my consciousness. It's something. You have to have somewhere in this samsara that we call samsara, this perpetual wandering, you have to have somewhere something that you think is going to give you pleasure. And for most people, it is. Metta is not the pleasure. It's the girlfriend or the boyfriend, the relationship. That's going to give me pleasure. That's the magic thing in this human life, that I have to find the person in my life. But it doesn't, it's all made up. I mean, I've had all kinds of relationships. I've been married, have children, blah, blah, blah. So I know about it. I'm not talking out of my rear end, so to speak. So, yeah, it's all made up. The whole thing is made up. Sexuality is made up, you know? Sexuality is made up. We make up our sexuality. We think that sexuality is pleasure, right? Most people would say, if I asked most people, that say sex is a high pleasure, right? Wouldn't they? Look at all the pornography. Why do people buy pornography? Billions of dollars a year. Why? Because they think there's some pleasure in it, right? There must be. Otherwise, it couldn't be that big money, right? To be beautiful and all these other things. This is important. This is big money, right? It must be. This must be it. But it isn't it. It's a lie. It's just made up in the mind. I like what I read the other day, what Ajahn Chah said about, someone asked him about sexualities. He was at IMS, you know, the Insight Meditation Society in the U.S., the first meditation society. In 1979, he made a trip to the U.S. This is Ajahn Chah, not me. Ajahn Chah said, yeah, they asked him about, you know, because he was talking about the third precept, which is, you know, morality, because he came to the United States, the West. He had never been in the West. He saw the lack of morality in Western people and how promiscuous they were. And someone asked him about sexuality. Isn't it a beautiful thing? And then, you know what he answered? It's all made up. It's a made-up thing. It's what you add on to things. For the enlightened beings, they say that what the ordinary person thinks is pleasure, they think it's suffering. And for what they think is suffering, the ordinary person thinks is pleasure. That's what the Buddha said. That's what many Aryans have said. It's in the suttas. Because we have perverted views. Our views are completely perverted. That's why we meditate. Why did I say you have to get your mind quiet? You have to get your mind serene and peaceful. I didn't tell you, I should have continued on. What's the purpose of the meditation? Not just to get quiet and peaceful. That's stupid, isn't it? You go to a spa, you can get quiet and peaceful. Why do you meditate? To get the mind quiet. For what reason do you get the mind quiet? So that the mind can see things clearly. You can't see things clearly when your mind is not quiet. And then when you see things clearly as they are, then you start getting wisdom, and then you eventually get the enlightenment wisdoms, and you get enlightened. That's how you get enlightened. But you have to get the mind really quiet, really quiet, really, really quiet to do that. That's the purpose of the meditation. It's not just to get peaceful. That would be stupid. I wouldn't be a monk if I was just trying to get peaceful. I'd go to a spa. It's easier. More fun, don't you think? I think. But you're doing it for another reason. Why? To get out. I always tell you, the purpose is to get out, not to stay here. It's to get out of this whole thing, because this is a mess. You're in a burning house. You're suffering. You don't even know. You think it's fun. So, this is the truth. But you don't like it. No one likes the truth. That's why I'm here, to tell you the truth. Yeah.
So you know that we are social animals, though.
Yeah.
How do you get around that? We obviously need others. We can't be an island, if you like.
Look, the monk is not an island. He has to go out every day and get food, but the food is offered. The Buddha was very wise. He set up this thing where the monks have to be dependent on the lay people. They're not allowed to store food. We can't store food 24 hours. So every day you have to get food. It has to be offered by hand. It has to be offered to the monk. Otherwise he can't eat. So there is a connection between lay people and ordinary people. But the monastic community is very important. Without the monastic community, you don't have real Buddhism. It's almost impossible. I think nowadays it would be an impossibility to have real Buddhism without monastic community. Maybe in the old days you could. So this is important to understand. Yeah, if you're really serious about Buddhism and you want to go for the enlightenment, yeah, it's good to have a very simple life. You have to simplify. If you're going to do it as a layperson, it's extremely difficult. Extremely. But it can be done. I'm not saying it can't be done. It can be done. But why have an extreme difficulty? Just become a monk or a nun. It's easier, I think. But most people don't want to do it. It's social conditioning, you know. A lot of social conditioning. And you can't escape the social conditioning. I have escaped because I'm in a monastery. How did I escape? I'm fortunate, good karma. Good karma to have escaped. That's all. But you have good karma. You're here listening to me. Some people have never heard what I said. Never in their whole life and never will. So you're lucky even to hear it because you have the opportunity. I'm not saying you'll take the opportunity, but you have anyone has the opportunity. I'm always encouraging people to go all the way. Why not? Even lay people. Most monks don't ever encourage lay people to do it. I always encourage anyone because I don't know if you're maybe a monk or a nun, but you're not there yet, that's all.
So we turn up at the monastery tomorrow and say, you invited us, that's okay.
Huh?
We turn up at the monastery tomorrow.
Yeah.
So, okay, I'm here. Where's my kooky? You said I could come along.
No. I'll tell you why you don't get the kooky. Because people have done that, exactly what you said, and they don't get the kooky. Why? Because they haven't earned it. Because you have to become an anagarika first. First you have to have sincerity. You have to come to the monastery, say, okay, I want to become a monk. Okay, put your name down on the list. Stay here a month or so and see how you like it. Okay, after that, then you go back and think about it. Then you have to come back for another month and be an anagarika. You have to come back for another month and then you become an anagarika for a year. You have to serve the monks and drive the vehicle, like the anagarika sitting in the back is going to become a monk soon. He's been here for a year. So, yeah. Then after that period of time, you get to know everyone and you see if you really like it. This is the kind of life you want to live. It sounds good. It's not easy. Of the people who become anagarikas, half leave. Of the people who become novices, half of those leave. Of the people who become monks, only half leave after 5 years. Of the people who become monks, half of those who 5 years to 10 years, another half maybe. No, I would say 10 or 12 years, another half leave. So you have 50 people, maybe two or three stay. And these are people who are very sincere, especially in the West. Not many people want to stay. Why? Because it's difficult. It's difficult. Some people stay, but they're not real monks. They look like monks. They dress like monks. But they're not monks yet. Not inner monks. It means they're going for the enlightenment. It's just like anywhere else. Don't think monks are different than any other human beings. They're all kinds of monks. You know? They're city monks. They're forest monks. Among each of those groups, there's all kinds of monks. There's all kinds of people, you know? That's all. So, they're just people. Until you get enlightened, you're just a people. That's all. And there are not many enlightened people in the world. So, you're going along that path. At least, to be an inner monk, you're going for the enlightenment. You're not going for the career. You're going for the enlightenment. Only for the enlightenment. And you'll do anything to do it. You're willing to sacrifice your life to do it. Because if you don't sacrifice your life, you're not ready to do it. Because your life is nothing. It's going to pass and go away, and you have to come back again and do it again. That's all. But you see, I've always said lay people have to make sure that the monks are doing the right thing. That's the job of the lay people, to make sure that the monks are giving to the right people. You're giving you're giving requisites. You're giving donations to the right people, the people who are sincere to do this path. But we don't know. We don't know. We don't know where people, everyone is going along, and maybe eventually in the next lifetime, they won't be career monks, they'll be real monks. We don't know. You know what I mean? So we give everyone the benefit of the doubt. We encourage everyone to go along, and we would like to push them to do the right thing. But you can't, because, yeah.
I'm fine, it's a little confronting.
I know, it's
but,
good.
But, that will be to a question. I'm not ever going to become a monk. I know that.
You don't know. You
I'm
don't know.
I'm not one that just accepts the world right if you go along with everything. But is there a compromise that I can sit comfortably with?
Okay. That's a sincere question. I know it's coming from a deep place. Yeah, why not? You want to find that, you will find it. You are finding it. You have found it. Otherwise, you wouldn't be where you are. Because you have that mind of renunciation, and yet at the same time, you know you can't do it right now. For some reason. For karmic reasons, for, you know, whatever the situation is you're in, you can't do it. Okay. So you do the best you can. We're all doing the best we can. Everyone in this world is doing the best they can. That's a fundamental belief I have. I don't feel that anyone's not doing the best they have. Hitler is doing the best he could. Everyone is doing the best they can, you know? But sometimes the delusion is so strong that it causes lots of problems for other people, the best they can, you know? But I think in your case, it's nothing to do with that extreme. It's much more refined. And so, yeah, you keep refining it. Keep refining it. Don't stick with anything. That's my suggestion. I'm answering your question for you, not for anyone else. You stick with it, and you're stuck. So keep refining it. Keep loose with it. Don't give yourself an answer. Do you understand? I think you do. Okay, that's the answer. That's your answer, not everyone else's answer. See, everyone understands every question differently. You ask me a question, and someone else hears the answer, they get a different answer. Everyone gets a different answer, even though it's the same words. You know, words are just words, you know? And it's all vibration. You know, you pick up other people's vibration. You know where they are. Everyone knows where everyone else is. But we avoid that. We just listen to the words, the content of the words. But it's not in the content. Never in the content.
But
yeah.
Isn't the career somehow of service to either people
exactly.
or to monks?
It's wonderful.
And that is actually like a gift?
It's a wonderful thing.
Or
but
a denial, a self-denial?
Yeah, it's a wonderful.
So
it's
he can also be career monk?
Yeah, it's okay. But it's not the purpose of that the Buddha set out for monks. He set out everyone to go for the enlightenment.
So eventually he might.
Yeah, eventually.
He might.
Yeah, eventually.
But that's what he thinks now, that is the way.
Well, I would say this, that if you don't have the idea that you're going for enlightenment, that it's not wholesome. Hmm. You may serve other people, but you should be going for enlightenment, and that is helping you right now for this life. We're not talking about future lives. You don't know what's going to happen in the future. You have no idea.
So you don't think Mother Teresa, with all what she done for humanity, have had enlightenment?
I don't know Mother Teresa.
No.
I never met her. So I don't know. I have any idea about her. I heard about her. I heard some things about it. She sounds very good. She sounds like a very good person. You know, but there are a lot of good people. She had the opportunity to help a lot of people, but there are other people who are helping a lot of people. But that's not unusual. That's in the world. There are a lot of people helping other people. We're not trying to just help other people. There's a lot of people who are helping people. Thousands. Organizations that help people, charities, all kinds of stuff that help people. But that's not the purpose of Buddhism. The purpose of Buddhism is to give you a way to get out. It's so radical.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't sound good. It sounds bad, B-A-D.
Yeah.
But okay, sorry.
When we build good karma, does that not help us in our next life become a monk, live to become a monk? And then after several lives of being a monk, then finally get
that's
a monk?
That's wishful thinking, isn't it?
I'm asking you.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you know, anything is good karma, bad karma is all karma. Good karma is still karma. Bad karma is karma. It brings you back. That's all it does is bring you back in a better situation. That's all. in a better situation. I'm interested in ending karma. I'm not interested in continuing karma. I don't want to keep going. You know, this is good enough karma to become a monk. It's pretty good. I've been a monk several times, not the first time. So I've had very good karma. I've had a very charmed life. Very. And I have good children and blah, blah, blah. You know, I've had good partners. Everything good. And I've never had money problems. And my health gets better if I get broke my neck even. It gets better right away. And I'm not young. So, yeah. But so what? Still all a waste of time unless you get out. That's what I think. But if you don't have that intention, then you'll never get out. How do you get out? You only get out when you have keep the intention. That's all. The intention to leave. And to finish. To finish the work. Rather than continue. It's not an endless path. It's a path with an end. It's a path that has an end. And that's the beauty of Buddhism. It gives you an end. It gives you a path and a way out. That's the beauty of it. It doesn't give you the heaven where you go on and on playing your harp or, you know, hanging out with beautiful nymphs. I don't know. What is it? It's just, you know, imagination. That's all it is. You know, or go to the hell realm. If you don't do that, you go down to the hell realm. All these different realms, yeah, they may sort of exist. Can you imagine what it would be like to be in heaven? That would be terrible, wouldn't it? Every day to play your harp. And eat beautiful food. It would be boring after 2 or 3 weeks. Then you have to go down to a hell realm to get to like it again.
Get some beans.
Yeah, it's just suffering. Suffering. So? Yeah.
It'd be like a cruise ship. There you are sitting there enjoying all the food and the luxury, and then you go down and put the coal in the burn. You're shoveling the coal in the ship.
Well, the ship is a good metaphor. The ship is, you're going out on this ship, and you know you're going out, and you're not coming back. That's it. You're going out on a cruise that you're never going to come back from. That's the end. It doesn't sound good. But it sounds good to me. It sounds good. It's only good if you see that it's all... But if you think it's good, then you think you're losing something. Don't you understand? It's as simple as that. So that's why the First Noble Truth is so important to understand. If you don't understand suffering in human life, you can't get out because there's something here that's good. And why should you give this up? This is beautiful. This is wonderful. You know, listen to the beautiful symphonies and see the beautiful sunsets and have beautiful children and everything is so beautiful and... You know, the weather is so nice and weather is so bad. I don't know. You know, it's nonsense. So what? You want to do this forever? Would you like to do this for 150 years? 200, 500, 1,000, 2,000 years? The same thing? You would get bored right away, don't you think? Mm-hmm. People said they want to live forever. I wouldn't want to live over 150. Well, I mean, I'll give you a number, any number. Okay, I wouldn't want to live over 130. You know, I have an aunt who's 106, and I don't know. So she's okay. But, you know, who wants to live that long? People have this idea that they can live for a long time, and that's good. I think it's terrible. It gets worse and worse as you go on. It can't get better. Don't you understand?
Is that that's why we are here? Like,
yeah.
Is that why we are here?
Why are you here in this room?
No, here in this world.
To what?
To just arrive at the final
end.
You know, end?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Hopefully.
But what chance in hell is that? You know?
No, wait, it's not a chance in hell, it's a chance
in heaven.
In Nirvana.
In
Nirvana.
Yeah.
Yeah. You don't think you don't have a chance. Everyone has a chance. There's no such thing as not having a chance. If you say you don't have a chance, then you're finished. You see? That's what happens to the career monk. Oh, I can't make it, so I'll just have a career. That's what happens. You give up. It's a give up. You know what I mean? It's some kind of mental give up. I don't know why people give up. But you so, why do so few people get enlightened? Because they have the persistence. They have the determination. Mm. And the most important, the courage. You need a lot of courage for this. You need to give it your life.
May I ask, have you reached enlightenment?
Have I reached enlightenment? Well, I'm eliminating a lot of things, but that's the idea. You see, what is enlightenment is you get freedom. What I wanted to talk about tonight was freedom. Elimination. We're trying to eliminate stuff. So it's a gradual process. And this is an answer to your question also. It's a gradual process. The more you eliminate suffering, the better you feel, the happier you feel. You keep eliminating until you get to nibbana. And that's the ultimate happiness. That is the ultimate happiness. The Buddha said, paramam sukham. Nibbana, paramam sukham. It's the ultimate happiness, nibbana. Why? Because you've eliminated all the suffering. Then you're free. You won't come back because there's nothing to come back to. There's nothing that wants to come back. You have to desire to come back. There has to be desire there. There has to be some volition or intention to do something. And when there's nothing, then it's gone. Then you don't have rebirth. You don't take rebirth. Mm-hmm. It's not that you disappear, poof, like that. It's that you don't take rebirth. You're stuffed. You're here. Everyone who's here is stuffed. Because you're here. You're in human life. Human life is not is suffering. Buddha said it's suffering. It is.
How do you cope with, you say you have a family. Do you have to detach from your loved ones then?
Detach? No. Well, yeah. What you do is, look, they're not my children. They're children. In the conventional sense, you did bring them up. You know what I mean? You brought them up, sort of, whatever that means. And, you raised them. You had them, whatever. And you bring them up. But then they become none. That's good.
I think we have to come to a...
Okay. Not yet. I have 3 minutes. 3 minutes left. Yeah, any question? Yes, questions. They have questions.
Yeah. So we're trying to eliminate desire.
Yeah.
What? Do you want to become enlightened?
Do I want to become? That's a great question. And that's, if there's any desire you have, let it be enlightenment. At least it's not bad. You know what I mean? But, if you desire enlightenment, you can't desire enlightenment, but it's not something that you do. It's something that happens by itself. You see, enlightenment is just when you've eliminated everything. You've eliminated. It's elimination, not getting. It's eliminating. It's the opposite. We meditate not to get something. We live in a monastery not to get anything. And there are people who do. They want to get. They get good mattresses. They get good requisites, They get a lot of stuff. But that's not what we're here for. We're here to eliminate. Elimination is the key. And as soon as you have eliminated everything, then you're enlightened. You don't try to get enlightened. It just happens. Does that answer your question?
Yes.
Yeah.
It's simple. Buddhism is so simple. Once you understand it, it's so simple. It's the simplest thing in the world. It's not complicated. It's simple. It's not deep and abstruse. That lay people can't understand it. We shouldn't talk to lay people about it. Talk about it all the time to lay people. Encourage them because they'll tell other people. It's inspiring, I think. Mm-hmm. Any other question? I want to stop. Any question? Don't stop if you have a question, ask. Mm-hmm. Because it's an opportunity. You might never have the opportunity again in this lifetime. You don't know. You never know.
Well, just a quick one. And so we can have Buddhist aspirations and not be Buddhist.
I don't call myself a Buddhist. I happen to be doing this, wearing robes.
But some people do, don't they?
Yeah, I'm not a Buddhist. I wouldn't say I'm a Buddhist. I follow the Buddhist teaching. The Buddha had good teachings, and they're still available. And I live in a monastery because it's the easiest place to meditate. It's much easier than, ordinary lay life. And that's all. That's it. If there was another form, besides this monastic form that worked, I would do that. If you can show me a better trip than this, I'll do that. Tomorrow I'll leave the monastery without any qualms. I'm telling you the truth. I'm not afraid to tell you the truth. I'll leave in a minute. You show me something better, I'll leave in a minute. Look, I left to become a monk. The first time I became a monk, I was getting a PhD in clinical psychology at the University of Montana in Missoula. And I heard about Buddhism in the evening on 1968 in the evening of New Year's 1968, and the person who told me about the Buddhism said, he told me there's a monastery in the U.S., the first U.S. Buddhist monastery called Tassajara, and he told me about it, and I said, oh, I want to go. He said, when are you going to go? I said, tomorrow morning. And I left the next morning and lived there for 3 years until my teacher died. So I'm ready to do anything. But I didn't never heard of Buddhism before. And as soon as I heard what it is, then I went. That's all. Hmm. I'm ready to give up anything.
Did you get your PhD?
No. I didn't even tell the university I was leaving. I'm still on their register. Anyway.
You never too late to finish it.
Huh?
You never too late to finish it.
No, I'm not interested, actually.
You've gone off that
idea. No. I became a psychologist eventually because I had a master's degree. I didn't get the PhD. I had a master's degree. In those days, you could become something with only a master's degree in the 60s. And I was a psychologist in California for a while. With disturbed children, and I did it for a year, and I would never do that again. It's draining on the body. Okay, let me finish by saying this. The idea is freedom. I better end on a nice note for the recording. Yeah, and the whole idea is freedom, to get free, to liberate yourself. Now, how do you get free? A good way to get free: be kind. Free yourself. Okay, so that's a nice ending. Okay, go ahead, Sarah.
Wow, you now made me like this, no? God. Very practical questions and very practical answers and point blank answers too. It's beautiful. Thank you. I won't hold you too long. It's already late.